Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
Организаторы мятежа, предав свою страну.
The organizers of the rebellion, betraying their country, their people, betrayed those who lured them into the crime. They lied to them, pushed them towards death, under fire, to shoot their own people.
The Kremlin says it's dropped criminal charges against Wagner chief Yevgeny Prigozhin and his mercenaries after he attempted to lead an aborted mutiny against the Russian military. Prigozhin's reportedly arrived in Belarus. Are Putin and Prigozhin dead men walking? We'll speak with James Risen, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter for The Intercept, who covered the 1991 coup in Moscow. We'll also talk to Risen about newly leaked audio of former President Donald Trump talking about holding classified documents as he faces espionage charges.
Isn't that amazing? This totally wins my case, you know. Mm-hmm. Except it is, like, highly confidential, yeah. Secret. This is secret information. Yeah.
And we look at James Risen's new book, The Last Honest Man, about a watershed moment in American intelligence history when Senator Frank Church led the Church Committee in investigating for the first time the CIA, the FBI, and the NSA.
We have seen today the dark side of those activities, where many Americans who were not even suspected of crime were not only spied upon, but they were harassed, they were discredited, and at times endangered.
The Church Committee looked at U.S. assassination targets from Castro in Cuba to Chilean General René Schneider and Allende in Chile to Lumumba in Congo and Diem in Vietnam. Risen says its investigation was so dangerous, three witnesses who testified were murdered. He also reveals new details about the role of the late Pentagon Papers whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg in the creation of the Church Committee. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The embattled head of the Wagner group of Russian mercenaries reportedly arrived in Belarus to live in exile. Earlier today, the Kremlin said it had dropped criminal charges against Wagner chief Yevgeny Prigozhin after he led a mutiny that saw an armored column advance to within 120 miles of Moscow in a major test of Vladimir Putin's rule. On Monday, Prigozhin published his first public statement since calling off the mutiny Saturday, saying his forces were reacting to an attack by Russia's military that killed dozens of Wagner fighters.
Despite the fact that we did not demonstrate any aggression, a missile strike was launched against us, and helicopters followed suit right after that. About 30 people, Wagner fighters, were killed. This incident served as a trigger which forced the Council of Wagner Commanders to decide that we had to start the march immediately.
In Moscow, President Vladimir Putin spoke to Russian soldiers outside the Kremlin earlier today, praising them for their defense of Russia's capital, which he said, quote, essentially prevented a civil war. Putin's remarks followed a short statement on national TV Monday evening in which he accused Wagner's leaders of treason, but offered the group's fighters a path to avoid prosecution.
I thank those soldiers and commanders of the Wagner group who made the only right decision. They did not turn to fratricide or bloodshed. They stopped at the last line. Today you have the opportunity to continue serving Russia by entering into a contract with the Ministry of Defense or other law enforcement agencies, or to return to your family and friends. Whoever wants can go to Belarus. The promise I made will be fulfilled.
In Ukraine, President Volodymyr Zelensky visited soldiers battling Russia's invasion on the Eastern Front and used his nightly address to praise Ukrainian troops for advancing, quote, in all directions. In Washington, D.C., the Biden administration's announcing a new military aid package for Ukraine today worth up to $500 million. This comes after the Pentagon last week said an accounting error had freed up an additional $3.2 billion worth of funding for weapons and ammunition for Ukraine. This builds on another $3 billion in additional arms shipments the Pentagon announced in May, citing accounting mistakes. The commander of Sudan's paramilitary rapid support forces has announced a 48-hour unilateral ceasefire for the Muslim festival of Eid al-Adha. The declaration came as the United Nations Children Fund, UNICEF, warned more than 100,000 children fleeing violence in Sudan face new dangers amidst a desperate situation in refugee camps in neighboring Chad. UNICEF warned essential services such as water, shelter, health and education remain extremely limited for the more than 140,000 Sudanese refugees and 34,000 Chadian returnees who've crossed the border since fighting erupted in April between the rival factions of Sudan. Military junta. Many of the refugees are injured or lost loved ones as they fled rapidly rising levels of violence in Sudan. In the occupied West Bank, a mob of armed Israeli settlers stormed the village of Safa over the weekend, firing bullets at residents and setting fire to homes and vehicles. Several people were injured. This is Mohammed Radi, a Palestinian journalist who was shot at by an Israeli settler as he filmed the attack.
We arrived in Safa. There were dozens of settlers. They fired at the village. The moment one of the settlers saw us filming, he shot in our direction. Two of the bullets went into the camera. Then the camera blew up from the shooting. Thank God we are safe.
In the last week alone, Israeli settlers have carried out at least 85 assaults on Palestinian towns in the West Bank. This comes as Israel's far-right government has approved the construction of thousands of new homes in illegal settlements across the West Bank, despite growing international condemnation. In the United States, the Supreme Court has ordered Louisiana to redraw racially gerrymandered congressional maps, siding with a lower court that ordered the state to create a second majority black congressional district. Monday's ruling was celebrated by Louisiana's lone black Congress member, Troy Carter, who said in a healthy democracy, fair and equitable representation matters, unquote. Also on Monday, the Supreme Court cleared the way for survivors of sexual assault to sue Ohio State University for failing to protect them from predator Dr. Richard Strauss. In 2020, former Ohio State wrestler Adam DeSabato accused Republican Ohio Congressmember Jim Jordan of begging him not to corroborate accounts of widespread sexual abuse perpetrated by Dr. Strauss after DeSabato's brother Mike exposed the abuse. In another ruling, the Supreme Court sided with the Biden administration over its immigration policy, allowing Immigration and Customs Enforcement to prioritize certain people for arrest and deportation. This week, the Supreme Court will rule on four other major cases. One seeks to ban the use of race-conscious college admissions policies. Another case asks the Supreme Court to embrace the independent state legislature theory, a radical reading of the Constitution that claims state lawmakers have sweeping authority to override courts, governors, and state constitutions. A third case argues businesses have the right to discriminate against LGBTQIA people if they cite religious objections, and justices will rule on whether the Biden administration can proceed with a plan to eliminate up to $20,000 in federal student loan debt for many borrowers. Newly published audio reveals former President Trump showed a classified Pentagon document to a publisher, a writer, and two staffers during a conversation at his Bedminster, New Jersey golf club 2 years ago. In the tape, Trump is heard shuffling through papers as he describes a top-secret Pentagon document revealing a plan by Joint Chiefs of Staff Chair General Mark Milley to attack Iran.
Well, with Milley, let me see that. I'll show you an example. He said that I wanted to attack Iran. Isn't it amazing? I have a big pile of papers. This thing just came up. Look.
The 2021 recording, which was first aired by CNN, contradicts Trump's recent claim on Fox News that he did not have classified documents with him in the July 2021 meeting.
Wait a minute. Let's see here.
Yeah.
I just found, isn't that amazing? This totally wins my case, you know. Mm-hmm. Except it is, like, highly confidential, secret. This is secret information.
Trump faces 31 counts of violating the Espionage Act through the willful retention of classified records. He also faces 6 counts, including obstruction of justice and false statements, at a federal trial in Miami scheduled for August 14th. We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast. In Pennsylvania, a federal court in Pittsburgh has begun the penalty phase of the trial of the man who shot and killed 11 Jewish worshipers at the Tree of Life Synagogue in 2018. Last week, a federal jury found the gunman guilty of all 63 federal charges. Jurors will now decide whether he should be sent to death row in a federal prison in Indiana. Joe Biden campaigned on abolishing the federal death penalty during his 2020 presidential campaign, and the Justice Department has instituted a moratorium on federal executions, but the administration has continued to seek the death sentence in some cases. In Colorado, a shooter who killed 5 people and injured more than a dozen others at an LGBTQIA nightclub last November has been sentenced to more than 2,000 years in prison. Monday's sentencing came after the shooter pleaded guilty to 5 counts of first-degree murder and 46 counts of attempted murder at Club Q. In Florida's Broward County, jury deliberations had begun in a criminal case against Scott Peterson, a former police officer who's accused of child neglect and other charges for failing to confront the gunman who killed 17 people and wounded 17 others at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School on Valentine's Day in Parkland, Florida, 2018. It's believed to be the first time a U.S. police officer has faced criminal charges for inaction at a school shooting. This is Prosecutor Kristen Gomes speaking in closing arguments Monday.
He was trained and he was armed. And when the moment came and he was called upon to act, he made a choice. At 2:23 p.m., Scott Peterson chose not to enter, knowing that those shots were being fired and at every time the trigger was being pulled, one of his students was down. He chose to retreat, and then he instructed all responding officers to stay back.
In Texas, 3 San Antonio police officers have been suspended without pay and arrested on murder charges after they shot and killed a 46-year-old woman in her own home. Melissa Perez was struck and killed by police gunfire as she brandished a hammer at officers while she appeared to be suffering a mental health crisis. San Antonio's police chief said Friday the actions of Sergeant Alfred Flores and officers Eliezer Alejandro and Nathaniel Villalobos were not consistent with the department's use of force policies and training. In Honduras, human rights advocates are warning of possible violations after Honduran armed forces raided prisons nationwide and the government announced a massive crackdown on organized crime. The operation drew comparisons with neighboring El Salvador as photos emerged of prisoners wearing nothing but underwear, sitting in rows with their heads down and hands around the back of their necks while armed soldiers in riot gear watched over them. This is Colonel Fernando Munoz speaking to reporters after soldiers said they seized guns, ammunition, and grenades from a prison in the city of Tamara, where at least 41 women were killed last week by accused gang members and possible complicity with prison authorities.
Following the president's order, we have started transitioning the prisons from the national police to the military police. We have begun the searches in order to take control of the jails.
And Mexican authorities have arrested the former head of Mexico's federal anti-kidnapping special unit in connection with the forced disappearance of 43 students from Ayotzinapa in 2014. Gualberto Ramirez Gutierrez was taken into custody early Sunday morning. He was first arrested in 2015, accused of ordering the killing of the 43 students, but he was ultimately released 3 years later. Arrest warrants were also issued against 8 other soldiers over their possible involvement in the mass kidnapping. To see our extensive coverage of Ayotzinapa, go to our website, democracynow.org. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, we spend the hour with James Risen, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter for The Intercept. He covered the 1991 attempted coup in Moscow. We'll talk to him about developments in Russia, the espionage charges against Trump, and Risen's new book, The Last Honest Man, about a watershed moment in American intelligence history with the Church Committee hearings. Stay with us. People everywhere still alive by Krungbin. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York with Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show with developments in Russia, as the embattled head of Russia's Wagner Group has reportedly arrived in Belarus to live in exile. Earlier today, the Kremlin said it had dropped criminal charges against Wagner chief Yevgeny Prigozhin after he led a mutiny that saw an armored column of Russian mercenaries advance to within 120 miles of Moscow. On Monday, Prigozhin published his first public statements since calling off the mutiny on Saturday, saying his forces were reacting to an attack by Russia's military that killed dozens of Wagner fighters.
None of the Wagner fighters was forced to take part in this march. Everybody knew its final goal. The goal of the march was to avoid destruction of the Wagner PMC and bring to responsibility those responsible whose unprofessional actions caused a huge number of mistakes during the special military operation. Our decision to turn around was based on two important factors. The first factor is that we did not want to shed Russian blood. The second factor is that we were registering our protests and not seeking to overthrow the government of the country.
This comes as Russian President Vladimir Putin spoke to Russian soldiers outside the Kremlin today, praising them for their defense of Russia's capital, which he said, quote, essentially prevented a civil war. Russia's RIA news agency reported Putin also spoke Tuesday with Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who offered his support. Putin attempted to reassert his authority in a national address Monday.
An armed rebellion would have been suppressed in any case. The organizers of the rebellion, despite being inadequate, could not fail to understand this. However, the organizers of the rebellion, betraying their country, their people, betrayed those who lured them into the crime. They lied to them, pushed them towards death, under fire, to shoot their own people. It was precisely this outcome, fratricide, that Russia's enemy wanted both the neo-Nazi in Kiev and their Western masters, and all sorts of national traitors.
Meanwhile, in Ukraine, President Volodymyr Zelensky visited soldiers on the front lines and used his nightly address to praise Ukrainian troops for advancing, quote, in all directions. For more, we begin today's show with James Risen, the two-time Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter, formerly with The New York Times, now with The Intercept, where he is senior national security correspondent. Jim Risen covered the 1991 attempted coup in Moscow for the Los Angeles Times. His latest article for The Intercept is headlined Prigozhin and Putin, Dead Men Walking. In the duel between the Wagner Group's Yevgeny Prigozhin and Russian President Vladimir Putin, both men lost their nerve. In a moment, we're going to talk about your new book, The Last Honest Man. But first, Jim, let's talk about this latest breaking news out of Russia. Why do you refer to Prigozhin and Putin as dead men walking?
Well, I think Prigozhin is clearly a threat as long as he's alive to Putin. And Putin has thrown a lot of people out of windows for a lot less than what Prigozhin has done. Prigozhin now can claim that he wasn't really trying to stage a coup, but it sure looked like a coup to everybody else, including Putin. And I think he, you know, he came so close to Moscow and so close to seizing power, and then he seems to have lost his nerve and cut a last-second deal with Putin through Lukashenko, the Belarus dictator, and that now he's kind of skulking off to Belarus in exile. And I don't think it's possible for Putin to allow him to continue to pose a threat to him from Belarus. And if we've seen anything from Putin's track record, it's that he kills his opponents or anybody he thinks threatens his power. And he's done it to people, as I said earlier, to people who've posed much less of a threat to him than Prigozhin does. And I think with Putin, he's been so weakened by this, and it's as he's been exposed as a much weaker leader than anybody realized. I think this will embolden a lot of his opponents, both in Russia and outside. I think it's going to embolden Ukraine and NATO to stand up more consistently to Russia and to Putin. And I think it's really a devastating event for his future as a leader. I don't think he can survive much longer unless he takes some more, far more dramatic action against Prigozhin than he has in the past.
Jim Risen, in terms of the causes of this revolt to begin with, I mean, this claim of Prigozhin that his forces were attacked by the Russian military, which again would, like many events in this war, it's quite hard to tell what actually happened versus what is being right. claimed to happen, because there apparently had been right. an attempt by the Russian government to bring all of these private military groups under the military, and in, right. Not only the Wagner Group, but there's several other private military groups that are functioning as part of the Russian war effort. So was this right. really... Did this attack happen, as far as you can tell? Has it
fired? It's still unclear whether it really happened or whether it's part of Prigozhin's disinformation campaign, because he's, you know, that's what he's really good at, disinformation, just like Putin is. So it's unclear. But clearly, I think far earlier than this supposed bombing, you know, Prigozhin was planning this. I think it's pretty obvious he was planning this for quite some time, and maybe he used some rocket attack as a predicate for a justification for going forward. I think, you know, the fact that he was able to march from Ukraine into Rostov and then north with virtually no opposition from the Russian military or the Russian security services must have been shocking to Putin, and I think is going to embolden all of Putin's any rivals that he has inside Russia. You know, he is, as I said earlier, he's killed off most of his major rivals, and I just don't see how he's going to let Prigozhin live for very long.
But read I think, a
I also
comment.
Think no, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I wanted to read a comment, email that we got from the executive secretary of the Ukrainian pacifist movement, Yuri Shelyazhenko. He wrote to us, quote, "I think the main lesson of the Wagner mutiny is that Russian militarists, including even war criminals like Putin and Prigozhin, are capable of negotiating and stopping bloodshed. This is an additional argument why it's not only necessary for humanitarian reasons, but also it must be possible to cease fire in Ukraine and start peace talks, not prolong the war for multiple decades." He's saying in this case, though he calls them both war criminals, this should not be viewed as weakness, but as an opening for negotiation, even with the overall war. Jim, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting idea. I think it's possible that this may be the moment of weakness for Putin, where maybe the West should see if he's ready to get out of Ukraine. I think if he was smart, he would pull his troops out of Ukraine now to solidify his power in Russia. You know, one of the vulnerabilities that Prigozhin exposed for Putin was that he had so much of the Russian army and security services in Ukraine that the door was open for Prigozhin to almost march right into Moscow. And so for a dictator like Putin, it's got to give you pause about how long you want to stay in Ukraine. It might be you might see some possible opening for trying to see if Putin is ready to get out of Ukraine.
Well, the former CIA analyst Mel Goodman has an article today that along the same lines, but he's also saying that that would require the United States as well to offer some efforts to bring back the expansion of NATO as a means of getting a negotiated settlement. What's your sense of that?
I don't think that's going to happen. I think what the war in Ukraine has shown is that Russia will attack, that Putin prior to the Ukraine invasion. I don't know how he feels now after the war has gone so badly, but he clearly was interested in trying to rebuild the Soviet Union in some fashion. You know, I think he's gained much more control over Belarus. He's fought wars in Georgia and now in Ukraine. And so, but all of those countries have one thing in common, which is that they are not in NATO. He has not attacked any NATO country. And I think the fact that the Baltic states, Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia, are in NATO has made them an area that he's not going to attack, even though I think he would love to have the Baltic states back in the Russian Empire. And the same for Poland and other parts of what used to be known as the Warsaw Pact. So I don't think that NATO is going to turn back. I think, in fact, once the war is ended, I would bet a lot of money that Ukraine will join NATO.
I really want to get to your book, Jim, a fascinating book called The Last Honest Man, the CIA, the FBI, the Mafia, and the Kennedys, and One Senator's Fight to Save Democracy. But first, I want to turn to the new developments in the charges that former President Trump violated the Espionage Act through the willful retention of classified records. On Monday night, CNN released an audio recording of Trump from a 2021 conversation at his Bedminster, New Jersey golf club when he discussed holding classified documents, knowing they were classified, knowing he hadn't declassified them, showing them to a publisher and a writer and his aides. In the tape, Trump is heard shuffling through the papers as he describes a top secret Pentagon document that Joint Chiefs of Staff Chair General Mark Milley had written, he said, a document about attacking Iran and more. Recording first aired on CNN contradicts Trump's recent claim that he didn't have the classified documents.
These are bad, sick people.
That was your coup, you know, against you.
That's well, it started right at the
beginning. Like when Milley's talking about, oh, you were going to try to do a coup. No, they were trying to do that before you even were sworn in.
That's right.
Trying to overthrow your election.
Well, with Milley, let me see that. I'll show you an example. He said that I wanted to attack Iran. Isn't it amazing? I have a big pile of papers. This thing just came up. Look. This was him. They presented me this. This is off the record, but they presented me this. This was him. This was the Defense Department and him.
Wow.
We looked at some. This was him. This wasn't done by me. This was him. Yeah. All sorts of stuff. It's pages long. Look. Wait a minute. Let's see here. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
I just found, isn't that amazing? This totally wins my case, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Except it is like highly confidential, secret. This is secret information. But look at this. You attack, and
Hillary would print that out all the time, you know.
She'd send it,
email.
No, she'd send it to Anthony Weiner.
Yeah.
The pervert. By the way, isn't that incredible?
Though? Yeah.
I was just saying, because we were talking about it. And, you know, he said he wanted to attack Iran and what?
And
these are the papers.
Did.
It's
pretty,
this was done by the military, given to me. I think we can probably get it.
I know. We'll have to see. Yeah, we'll have to try to
declassify.
Figure out a
See, as president, I could have declassified.
Yeah.
Now I can't, you know, but this is
classified. Now we have a problem.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
It's so cool. I mean, it's so, here and I have a, and you probably almost didn't believe me, but now you believe me.
No, I believe
it's incredible, right?
No.
Hey, bring some Cokes in, please.
So that audio aired on CNN of Trump. It comes as he's charged with violating the Espionage Act through the willful retention of classified records. He also faces six counts, including obstruction of justice and false statements at a federal trial on Miami.